Welcome, everyone. I and a few of my friends, my Zen friends, Jogen-san and Shoho and Myoe, the head of practice at Green Gulch Zen Center, recently attended a retreat with Sokni Rinpoche, receiving lots of teachings. It's nice to have a little cadre of Zen priests. At this Tibetan teaching, it's one of the gifts of American Dharma, is we have all these great teachers and traditions all coming together. Especially in California. And many great teachings were presented this week. The one that struck me that I thought would be nice to bring up tonight is Sogni Rinpoche presenting the path of practice as having these two different aspects that he called the path of healing and the path of liberation. And I've never heard it quite put this way. This is not like a traditional Buddhist breakdown. This is, I think, his own insight from teaching Americans for decades now. So the path of healing is finding a general sense of well-being. A relaxed body, feeling okay about ourselves. In our modern culture now, we have things like mindfulness-based stress reduction. People have maybe heard of this. It's more popular than Buddhism, maybe, as far as numbers of people practicing, based on Buddha's teachings, but a kind of secular movement. And I've never attended one of these courses, but hearing a lot about them, they sound to me like this path of healing. It's finding stress reduction and well-being. And practices on this path of healing are practices we often offer and promote, like finding a nice settled posture, a comfortable posture, upright yet relaxed, and breathing. Breathing's a good practice. If we neglect this practice, we will quickly die. Breathing, but enjoying the breath. Letting the breath fill the whole body. This is the way I like to practice breathing, is letting the breath settle down into the lower abdomen and all the way down to the base of the spine, even. Of course, the breath, the lungs don't really go down to the base of the spine, but we can feel our kind of energetic breath fill this whole lower body. And it feels quite wonderful to let it, doesn't it? You can practice this as we speak and listen here. When we're rushed and stressed, the breath tends to like move up into the upper lungs. So letting the breath settle. I think when we sit for a while in Zazen, the breath naturally feels as if it moves downward. And this is emphasized in Zen practice. Not too much in like classical Zen, but occasionally Dogen, our founder, will say, let the breath come forth from the Dantian, That's this, kind of a Taoist term, really, for this field of elixir in the lower abdomen. Maybe we call field of elixir because it feels so nice when we let our breath energy fill this area. Let it come from nowhere and fill this area, and let it leave this Dantian and melt into space. And being present, our busy mind is often thinking about past and future, so settling into the present. And then I think an important aspect of this path of healing is completely accepting whatever experience is happening. Maybe that's the basic summary of the so-called path of healing. You probably have heard about such a practice, right? Whatever's happening, whatever physical sensations, whatever emotions, whatever experience, not resisting it, completely accepting and feeling the experience, which is easier said than done, right? We tend to resist unpleasant experiences, try to change them a little bit. So when finding a relaxed upright posture, when letting the breath settle into the lower belly in a relaxed and enjoyable way, if this is the path of healing, it's not about following the breath and attending the breath as a kind of a chore, something that we're supposed to do. Come on, stay on the breath. You missed a beat. More like to follow the breath because it's so enjoyable. I think any kind of practice, we can make it into a chore, right? But the path of healing is the opposite of making anything into a chore. Relaxing and accepting and enjoying this relaxation. And when it's not enjoyable, whatever comes into our experience is not enjoyable, then completely embracing that, accepting it. Which often we talk about, like if it's a physical uncomfortable sensation in the body, like some tightness in the chest, say, we put the attention, rest the attention naturally on the tension, on the tightness, without any wish to, like, let's have it go away, or even let's try, even to think let's try to relax it would be a little bit manipulative on the path of healing. Completely feeling the sensation, and then it starts to open up, doesn't it? I think as meditators, we at least, I think, all have a little sense of how that works. It's kind of counterintuitive in the world. Generally, when there's something that's unpleasant, we try to get rid of it. But if we go right into it and feel it completely, if it's a contraction, a physical or mental or emotional contraction, it starts to just relax a little bit. So through such practice of complete acceptance of whatever experience is happening, we find a kind of sense of well-being. And I think this is why many people come to meditation practice. And actually, it works. That's why we come back. And I think in traditional Buddhism, we can occasionally find some of this kind of practices, this path of healing. But honestly, when I look into the classical teachings, there aren't so many in this area. That's why it's really nice to talk about it. And I think modern Zen, we've discovered these practices, and we do talk about them. And I think that's a good gift of modern American Zen. But I don't think you hear Dogen talking about this path of healing so much in this way, if at all. Maybe a little bit in the early teachings of the Buddha. So then we have this other path called the path of liberation, which is kind of the, maybe we could say, classical Buddhism. And especially Zen, I think classical Zen tends to emphasize this path of liberation. Liberation from suffering, liberation from any grasping, liberation from this, from the belief in anything, liberation from the sense of an independent self, liberation from me, liberation from you, liberation from the separation between me and you, liberation from all fixed views. So already you can maybe see how this starts to sound a little bit different, right, in the path of healing. They're not completely unrelated, of course, but when this teaching was presented and distinguished these two types, it really struck me, because I think I hear and offer teachings in both these sides, but often they're not distinguished. It's just a mishmash of helpful practices. So to tease them apart a little bit, and they're both very valuable, and they can work together, but I think it's really good to look at the differences and to at least know which one we're working on at any time. Path of liberation is also about acceptance, a complete acceptance, but maybe we could say if the path of healing is about complete acceptance of every experience that arises without any manipulation of it, you could say the path of liberation is about complete acceptance of the emptiness of every experience that arises without manipulating the emptiness of it. Emptiness is one of those tough terms, right? You could say, if the path of healing is complete acceptance of experience, the path of liberation could be said like complete acceptance of the reality that our experience is not what we think it is. Complete acceptance of the ungraspability of all experience. See, that could be like a little bit different. And to me, it doesn't make much sense to try to do this path of liberation, the complete acceptance of the ungraspability of experience, without first completely accepting the experience. So I think that's the general order. If we talk about path of healing and path of liberation, first we have to do this path of healing. In other words, finding a general sense of well-being, a general sense of ease and presence, a general enjoyment of the breath. Not perfect healing, but general sense of well-being by accepting experience. And I've heard many times at many Zen centers over many years the ultimate practice of Zen being just this. Just completely accept whatever's happening, and that is unsurpassed enlightenment. But I feel like this insight this week, if kind of teasing these apart, that is part of unsurpassed enlightenment, but it's not the whole story. Mm-hmm. Complete acceptance of experience. We might even say it is liberating from suffering. It frees us from a lot of suffering, especially if we have a lot of tension and busyness and strong, painful emotions then we really can work on this path of healing for a long time, maybe forever. This is our emphasis. But it's not completely liberating, because we can fully accept the experience or the emotion or the feeling, and it's still what we think it is. It maybe transforms a little bit, but it's still like me having an emotion. You could say there's still some dissatisfaction, even when the path of healing is complete. How these work together, it seems like maybe some would trust that the path of healing, then this complete acceptance of experience, whatever's happening, over a long time especially, and doing it really thoroughly, will naturally emerge into the path of liberation. In other words, by completely accepting the feeling of the moment, the thought of the moment, completely accepting the fact that we can't stop thinking, just really like warmly embracing, compassionately being what is happening, that will naturally unfold into realizing that, wow, maybe what's happening is really not what I think it is anyway. And I wouldn't deny that is a possibility, actually. I think it may work this way. And again, I think probably in the Zen tradition, some might teach it like this. And the way the path of healing unfolds into the path of liberation might be very, very natural, and such a subtle transition, we might not even notice it, or we might not notice, okay, now we just shifted from path of healing to path of liberation. A kind of a seamless transition. It could happen this way, but also I would propose that it might not. It might just be that we get more and more accepting of our experience and have this kind of healed well-being, but still be holding a sense of me and my well-being. And so that's where this point, I think, is where all the teachings of the Buddhas and the Zen ancestors start addressing the situation at this point, I think, usually. They maybe assume that this is like, you know, in classical early Zen, that it was a radical new type of practice, and maybe it was felt that people who were ready for Zen had already been on this path of healing for a long time and actually did have a sense of basic well-being, so they didn't talk about it much. Or maybe they talked about it with their students, but it didn't get recorded because it wasn't that radical enough for people to write down. Whereas to say, when the Buddha say things like form itself is emptiness, somebody maybe felt like, now that's worth writing down. That's not so intuitive, actually. That's not so natural. So I think that the path of liberation, you could say, there's all these Dharma teachings that speak of the subtleties of how to, we could say, direct the settled, easeful mind and body towards a new way of seeing, that those teachings come often in the form of words, right? There's many teachings about how to do this, whereas the path of healing, I mean, I've been speaking some words, but it's a much more natural. We discovered on our own through Zazen more. So I would say the path of healing, we need to hear some instructions about, really, let's try to completely accept ourselves. Maybe that says it all right there. It's not a complicated teaching. Whereas the path of liberation, the way we feel that I'm over here and you're over there, this is quite subtle, this kind of misperception. So we maybe need a lot of conceptual teachings even about the path of liberation, which the Buddhism and ancestors very nicely offer many, many teachings about how to liberate this misperception of self and other. If we have too many conceptual teachings on the path of healing, that is kind of maybe distracts us from the work of just being this experience. It's almost like Zazen, sitting in meditation, naturally teaches us through experience to just be with our experience. So the conditions for the path of healing and the path of liberation are a little bit different. That's why I think it's nice to be really clear which one we're cultivating or emphasizing. Path of healing, maybe part of the conditions is being really comfortable, being really relaxed, and not, for example, these so-called emptiness teachings, I think it's like not so good, actually, to read the Prajnaparamita Sutra in 100,000 lines, to read Dogen's Treasury of the True Dharma Eye with all its mind-messing, rug-pulling, language-twisting surprises. It's just like, it might be like fun, but maybe it could be distracting, actually, from the path of healing. Does that make sense? Yeah. And then when we feel settled enough, we maybe naturally, how would we know when to shift paths? It's up to each one of us, right? But maybe feel like, I'm settled enough, and I've been working on this for a while, and I feel pretty settled, and I maybe have a little inkling that my settledness and ease here may not be what Shakyamuni Buddha realized under the Bodhi tree. If it was just that the Buddha accepted himself completely, then we might have some doubt. Like, is that that simplicity of total self-acceptance? Is that the whole of the start of a whole new religion? And why did he speak like 10,000 pages of teachings on how to just be yourself? Maybe there's something more. And then naturally we get inquisitive and exploratory, and we start to open the pages and look deeper. And so for myself, in my own Zazen practice, and we could speak about these two paths of Zazen practice, but also just throughout the day, daily life practice, I think we could apply both of them also. Although path of healing, maybe especially good for off the cushion, because it's simpler and more basic. We can always, through the day when we're feeling rushed and busy, just settle into this experience and accept it completely. But in my own Zazen practice, I use both. It's not like it's an either or thing. The way I think of it sometimes is like, I sit down for Zazen and like, how am I doing? Like maybe yesterday something kind of like disturbing happened, and I sit down and it immediately comes up. It's like, oh yeah, this conversation didn't go so well, and there's some heartache maybe, right? We feel it's a body and mind experience. It doesn't feel so well. A well-being, then for me, these days anyway, I look at that as kind of like a sign, like, let's not apply emptiness teachings to this. It, not to say that that's not always could be valuable, but I find, first of all, let's really feel this, accept this completely. And sometimes, if it's not like such a strong heartache, maybe like just be with the heart for a while, and within one period of zazen, sometimes it's like, okay, yeah, I can be with this. I feel actually a little different after 10 minutes, just really being with it. With non-manipulating way, being with experience, it's more settled, in the present. Again, it's not like I'm, like, free of every trace of discontent. In fact, as I mentioned, I think the path of healing doesn't free us from every bit of discontent. But basically okay. And then kind of shift. Intentionally shift. It's a different type of practice, right? The path of liberation. And I think maybe in a way it's a little bit more inquiring practice. It's not quite... The path of healing is a very just path of just being, really. Not... We don't have to investigate very much. That would be sort of distracting. Any sort of inquiry or questioning is kind of distracting from just being with what's happening. But when we're being with what's happening, we're quite settled, then we might... inquire into, like, well, who is this that is enjoying the breath right now? What is it that's aware of what's happening, that's aware of the experience? That's a little bit deeper than just, for example, being aware of experience is one thing, and then being aware of the awareness of experience is a little bit of a step back, right? And I think if we do that without feeling about basic well-being, it's kind of distracting and doesn't really work too well. It's just kind of like, come on, it's almost like taking an emptiness teaching as a way to kind of manipulate our experience instead of just being with it. But then if we're just being with experience without inquiring into how perception seems to be creating a sense of self and other, for example, then such a thing might not ever dawn on us, because we've always had the perception of self and other. So we kind of take it for granted. I think just by accepting the sense of self and other, that I don't think does dissolve. Like, we need some inquiry and we need some Dharma teachings about these points. And that's actually what most Dharma teachings, at least classically, are about. And also I find for myself, there may be some periods where I kind of like the idea of the path of liberation thing, I confess. I think they're actually both equally valuable and equally necessary. But I think when I was first drawn to Zen, that's part of my unique karmic conditioning, I heard the path of liberation part. I thought, that's cool. I didn't actually hear about the path of healing part, and I maybe wasted some time trying to sort of bypass the path of healing to go right to the path of liberation in a way that's maybe not that effective sometimes. So it's hard if you have a bias towards one or the other of these. We might even say, if there's a bias, then we are just completely present with the bias. We completely accept the bias. We don't try to, I shouldn't be so biased. I should be more equanimous with which path I'm on. No, just, I feel a little biased, but let's just feel this bias. Be this bias completely. And then, if we can really be with that without trying to reject the bias, then we kind of settle into the bias, and then we can start inquiring into, what is this bias and what's it based on? That's where it shifts to the path of liberation. But because I have this little bias maybe sometimes towards the path of liberation, because we might say that's the unique Buddhist thing, and that's that's the complete liberation. I kind of have this bias where it's, that's the complete liberation, whereas the path of healing is maybe 80% liberation, but I'm into that last 20%. But if I'm into the last 20% without the first 80%, it's kind of a waste of time and it's kind of bypassing. So sometimes it might be like, let's do the sit down for zazen. Oh, there's some heartache. And like, let's do the path of healing for 10 minutes and then path of liberation. And after 10 minutes, I might be like, there's still some heartache. Could be because I haven't been completely doing the path of healing because I'm like kind of waiting to like get on with the path of liberation. And that waiting to get on with the path of liberation is one way of talking about what's not the path of healing. Because wanting to get on with something is not completely accepting what's happening now. So Zazen teaches us all this, I think, in a beautiful way. And so then this, okay, we're just gonna do this path of healing this whole period, or until I feel honestly with myself that I'm ready to move on. I think again, this is like, you could say a teacher can't actually tell you when you should make the shift. It's totally a very intimate experience, I think. So only we can know. And it's again, I feel like this is being honest with myself about, like, even though I have this bias, I'd like to do this, apply some of these emptiness teachings because I love them. and I know that they work when I'm really settled. They have their own amazing way of changing our experience. But sometimes it's like, no, really, if I'm honest with myself, let's just do this. And I think another way of looking at it is like about Zen practice. If you're a long-term Zen practitioner, I think it's nice to include these aspects of like kind of daily zazen. Maybe not every day, but nice. At some point, I think that's when I really know this is my path. Is I have a daily practice of at least it's some of my day. It doesn't have to be 40 minutes even, right? 10 minutes, but like, if we can't, in 24 hours, if we can't find 10 minutes to stop and not do anything, then maybe we're not, I think it's good to question whether we're really, this is a priority in our life. Look at all the other things we do in the 24 hours, right? 10 minutes, something, anyway, we have this daily kind of maintenance practice, and then we have like longer retreat practice, sesshin. This is sort of a generalization, and it depends on each person and where they're at in practice, but sometimes I think of my own practice, sometimes daily zazen is this kind of maintaining the path of healing, and that's mainly what I'm working on, and because life is busy and so on. And it's nice when daily zazen, for sitting one or two periods a day or something, can emerge into this shift to this, oh, actually, everything is truly not what I think it is. Everything is actually empty space appearing as a world. It's hard to open to that in the middle of a busy day. Maybe over time we can more. And then these longer times, like sesshin retreat, is where we're sitting a lot of zazen. We can do the healing part for maybe a whole day, maybe a couple days. And then naturally, I think sesshin tenderizes us longer sitting when we sort of keep staying with it without escaping from it. It does its work on us. It's the amazing gift of sesshin. It's like we don't even have to do it, but we have to sit for a while, it seems, till we get, okay, like I'm resisting my experience. But after a couple of days, I surrender. This body is just going to be uncomfortable for the next few days. I accept it. And then, and now I can start exploring something. So, again, it's different. I sometimes think of myself as, sometimes they say that people with sharp or dull faculties, sometimes I think of myself as actually kind of more on the duller faculty, or I'm not a naturally concentrated person. So, and I think it takes some concentration and focus also to apply these inquiry types of meditation in a really experiential way without them just becoming some conceptual tool. So, does that make some sense? The way of talking about these two paths? I find it really helpful. I never heard it quite put that way. Sometimes we hear about things like shamatha and vipassana, which are like calm abiding and insight. So that's a little bit related, but I think this is not exactly just calm abiding. This is like total sense of well-being. And I would also put like things like yoga and qigong, tai chi, and psychotherapy, and many things that we do that are kind of spiritual practice areas. Put all of that in this path of healing. So good, so many great practices, right? But I don't know if some people maybe could realize the complete emptiness of duality immersed in qigong. I'm sure there are some, but maybe not. And the difference between these also, I think, is subtle, which is, I think, why we often mix them together and we don't distinguish them. Say, just accepting myself, really, it actually does, like I said, I made up the number at 80%, but maybe really does free like 80% of our suffering. Maybe that is what the Buddha realized under the Bodhi tree. But it's only have to be, you know, do we want to keep looking deeper, or do we want to say, maybe there is more? So, you have questions or comments about this? Distinguishing these two paths, how to... Yes?
I'm asking a little of another way of putting it. Of one way we're trying to heal our bruised and broken egos, or our sense of ourselves, and then we're also dissolving and letting go of it.
Yes.
Like building and healing.
Yes.
Dissolving and releasing.
Yes, nice way to put it, yeah. Could even say completely self-acceptance and self-transcendence. We might even put it like that. Or completely accepting myself and completely accepting my no-self.
And actually I had the thought too that as we move along with the practice, we can go back and forth in one informing the other.
So yeah.
Mm-hmm. That can help us
go
like,
oh, then
don't worry so much.
Yes. Yes. Yeah, they can. We you know, I'm presenting it a little bit like path of healing as a preliminary to path of liberation, but they really do work together very nicely. Sometimes on the path of healing, especially if we're studying and contemplating this emptiness and non-duality teachings, we just bring in a little bit of that in a very gentle way, not as a heavy-handed thing to like change our experience because we want to change it, because that's not acceptance. But in a light-hearted way, maybe bringing a little bit like, all right, maybe I've heard before that like maybe I'm not who I think I am, and then we feel a little lighter. And, actually the breath sunk down a little bit as soon as I thought that. That would be a kind of reversal. And I think also we can talk about path of liberation as also a complete acceptance. So in a way, I think we could say the entire Buddha Dharma is total acceptance, but maybe where we could put it is path of healing is complete acceptance of every experience that's happening, and path of liberation is complete acceptance of the ungraspability of everything that's happening. which is also important, that we completely accept that everything is really not what we think it is. Anyway, that's true awakening. It is also a complete acceptance, but it almost sounds like the opposite. Complete acceptance of experience and complete acceptance that experience is not experience. And yet, not really opposite either. Almost like two sides of a coin.
Sometimes it's helpful for me to do the calming, the healing practice, and then I get the sense sometimes of the sense of liberation coming through me and being open to something beyond anything that I've imagined or expected. And then all of a sudden, something new appears, or in a new way, or in a new feeling, or a new perception.
Mm-hmm.
It's feeling from the gut kind of thing. But it takes, as you say, it takes sort of centering and stepping back and letting the unknown, the grasp of the empty, come through us.
Yeah.
And become manifest in a way we can not grasp it, but feel it, sense it, be it.
Maybe another way to say something like that is that this ungraspability or emptiness or non-duality is not some like special thing that we're actually like making up.
No.
It actually is the reality of reality. Right? So because it's reality, when we're more and more settled in ourself, then reality is like, well, there's less resistance to what's happening, and therefore there's less resistance to reality.
Yes.
Which is like emptiness, so that it maybe starts to dawn on us naturally. So again, I at least the way I see it now is I think sometimes it might that might just dawn on us naturally through the path of healing, and that's why sometimes we hear things like you know, enlightenment is an accident or grace or something. Just sit long enough and it will dawn on you. That's one approach, but I confess that I have a little bit of resistance to that, because I actually feel like it might not. It might
there's no one way.
Or it might take a long, long, long time. Whereas the path of liberation, there's methods and teachings and pointers and inquiries to help us recognize reality, and you could say quicker. And we might say, well, if we're getting into this quicker thing, then that sounds like we might not be accepting our endless suffering. I'm willing to suffer forever, because that is the path of healing. I'm willing to true full healing is like, yeah, this like heartache, I don't care if it ever goes away. That's when it starts to open up, right? We're like, if I do this healing path for another 10 minutes, maybe I'll be done. I can move on. Like, that's already, that will postpone it. But this thing about speeding up the process, or also I think more reliable, if the Buddha's, I never heard actually Shakyamuni Buddha or the Zen ancestors say enlightenment is an accident, actually. I think they actually say enlightenment is real, or nothing is really real, but enlightenment is in a way more real than anything else. And here's like 10,000 instructions on how to realize it. You know, it's like, not just like, there's nothing we can say about it, so just wait. They never say that. And yet, if we're like, well, just apply the 10 steps and you'll get it, that's not quite it either. And you could say, well, is speeding it up kind of a greedy thing? It could be, right? That's the Suzuki Roshi's gaining idea. Will actually prevent it if it's for ourself. But if it's our vow, this is our bodhisattva vow, I vow to realize complete awakening for the benefit of all beings, because I can help them a little bit in my dualistic, murky state. I can definitely practice kindness and compassion to some extent, but to completely free all beings from all suffering, actually I have to realize this. Otherwise it's kind of hearsay, like, well, I don't really know, read the sutra, the Buddha says it, but I don't, and then then the person might ask, well, is it true, does it really work? Well, I don't know, the Buddha says it, you try it, I'm working on it. If we could say, no, I know that it works. And like, because we need this kind of trust, and we need more than the books, right? Of the ancients who realized that we need people that put it into practice and test it and verify it. So you see, and like, so let's do that as soon as possible, because we could die tonight.
Right now,
before it's already night. Yes, time is limited. When I look back at my life up to this point, I think, wow, I've wasted a lot of time, so-called wasted. You know, anyway, tonight I would maybe say, what is wasting time is just forgetting this bodhisattva vow to realize complete awakening for the benefit of all beings. I waste a lot of time. Yes.
One thing I wanted to share, I inspired by your presentation, but there's one point that didn't agree with my experience.
Please.
And that was that the most pivotal experiences I've had of freedom from the idea of self have been when I look into who is experiencing discomfort. So, for example, I've been in session, and I remember an early session in particular where I was racked with deep, deep pain.
Mm-hmm. Physical pain.
What's that physical pain? Mm-hmm. Deep, deep pain. Mm-hmm. When you're sitting 10 hours a day. Mm-hmm. And based on hearing the teachings of Dharma, that there is no self, mm-hmm. then I was like, well, what is experiencing this?
Mm-hmm.
There's no self. What is experiencing this? And I looked into that inquiry, and I had a pivotal life-changing experience.
Mm-hmm.
Because I looked and I couldn't find anybody.
Yeah. That sounds like the path of liberation.
Well, here's what's interesting. So it had to do with, I had really deep stomach issues
mm-hmm.
as a child, like trauma. After that experience, it went away.
Mm-hmm.
So that path of liberation, the path of healing came together
mm-hmm.
that experience, and it just dropped away.
Yeah. Well, that is, I think, a nice example of, like, where they come together. You could say the path of healing is being with the physical pain. First being, like I did mention, we can't really, like, ask whose pain it is until we really feel the pain, because there isn't even a pain to ask about.
Involved in the struggle.
Yeah, yeah.
But
so,
it didn't have to be calm and, like, pleasant.
Oh, I see. I see. That's the point that you would... Yeah, so that's good, yeah, that healing doesn't necessarily mean everything's going to become all super relaxed. I think we emphasize relaxation, but the path of healing, and maybe this 80% healing when we're ready to take the next step, could be like actually feel like this, it's chronic pain and it's never going to actually go away, but I really can accept it now. And then we can ask, whose pain is it?
Who's experiencing this fear, this
yeah.
self-consciousness, or this embarrassment.
Yeah.
And the other thing I wanted to add is it's not like you're applying some advanced technology.
Yeah.
You don't even have to ask, it's a turning of the heart. Like, what is experiencing this?
Mm-hmm.
It's a very natural turning of the light. Like,
turning the light around.
If I'm suffering,
mm-hmm.
I have the idea that there's a self. Guaranteed.
Mm-hmm.
If there's a
yep.
sense of opposition, I just look away.
That's a nice...
What is that sense of self?
Yeah.
And it's just that simple.
But it's a specific question, right?
Usually for me, it's, so if I'm experiencing, let's say, anxiety, I go, what mm-hmm. is anxious?
Yeah, mm-hmm. We had, we had one session a few years ago where we're looking into the central teaching of who is the problem maker? Or what is the problem maker? Yeah. That's a nice question one could ask actually all day long. I have a problem here. Well, who's the problem maker? Yeah. So it's it's a very natural and not complicated. I think it's a nice point that you make. And yet I would say it's a specific type of inquiry. We have to actually look. Like, we can't ask it in a kind of theoretical way, right? Who is it? Well, it's just five skandhas. Got it. That didn't do anything. Now, who is it really? Like, who? I mean, this is one of the classic Zen questions. Really, who? And then if we come to an answer and we feel satisfied with a conceptual answer, we could say, who feels satisfied with that conceptual answer? Keep going back until we don't find a conceptual answer. And that, I could say, is the ungraspability. Yes.
I feel like that, not just myself, but everyone, that, like, I feel like we have to do Zazen as much as possible, like, in all the time. Because what I would like to see is that my mind would always be in a state of, like, a Zen mind, like the mind of Zazen. And then I feel like if my mind was purified and clear, and I was, you know, conducting my business with that mind, then I would be more compassionate to others, there would be less suffering to them and to myself. And that way, when I'm in Zazen, there would be less need for the healing,
mm-hmm.
because I would not be causing suffering.
Yeah,
if I have that mind.
That's right, yeah. So, and naturally, I think, in a way, just what you said is why we're all here, right? Because we do. Especially if we stick with the practice, we actually know that we do want to, that's our vow. We want to be that way for ourselves and for others compassionately in the world. And then, we just have to be careful not to sort of, bypass the complete acceptance part of, like, I really want to do the real Zazen, the path of liberation all the time. I'm being a little bit hard on myself because I'm not doing it. I think that's where it gets tricky, right? We want it so badly. I mean, I know this experience very well. Maybe we all do as practitioners. We really want this full liberation and, like, let's get on with it. And we start to get impatient with ourselves because it's a slow process from the conventional point of view. The relative point of view, it seems like a slow process. In fact, it's every moment is the opportunity to actually do both. Completely accept, I don't want to speed up the process, and yet my vow is to save all beings right now. So they seem contradictory, and yet I think those two can come together in a way that's, we're not rushing ahead, and yet we're attentive to the possibility of the moment. Yeah. I think it's good to want that fully, and then from this, remembering this path of healing and path of liberation, division, conventional division, I think is a helpful one. Just in order to, like, do I feel totally settled with my experience right now, even if I don't feel compassion? And I'm like, okay, let's see if I can be with that to some extent. And then, who is it that feels 80% healed? Because the one who feels 80%, 80% complete on the path of healing, the one who feels 80% complete on the path of healing is 100% on the path of liberation. Can you follow that? And that one, I'm not going to say anything about that one. Quick, let's get out of here. May our intention equally extend to every being and place with the fullness of the path of healing and the path of liberation, freeing all beings from all suffering until there is the complete acceptance of what is and isn't. Beings are numberless. I vow to save them. Delusions are inexhaustible. I vow to rend them. Dharma gates are boundless. I vow to enter them. Buddha's way is unsurpassable.